This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and I have a very interesting guest on tonight. And before we start, I'd just like to tell you something. We're going to tell you some information about neurotransmitters and supplements and things that can change your behavior and the way you feel, but you need to not do this yourself. You need to go to a doctor. The doctor will have to request this test for you, but it's important that you not do it at home without some kind of guidance because you might get in some trouble. Anyway, thanks for being with us, Dr. Kellerman. We have with us Dr. Godfrey Kellerman from Neurosciences, Inc., and we're going to talk about neurotransmitters tonight. How are you, Dr. Kellerman?
Hi, how are you?
Do you think I'm right about that, what I said? I just want to make sure.
Yes.
People need to do this under guidance.
Yes, I agree.
So tell us, before we get started, just a little bit about you so they know who you are.
Well, as you might have noticed from my accent, I'm originally from Germany, but I've lived here in this country for 35 years. I'm a biochemist by training, and I also studied philosophy. So by combining philosophy and biochemistry, it gives me some advantage. I can see both sides of the spectrum. Neither discipline alone will give you the full truth. So after I came here to this country, I stayed with the university for quite a few years, and then I got on my own and was involved in various biotech ventures. However, for the last 8 years, I have been involved in the study of the nervous system. Nervous system, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many other people, is really the last frontier of human biology. I think that this is where we will see a lot of action and a lot of exciting news in the next 5, 10, or 20 years. So this is a very important field. On the other hand, and at the same time, the nervous system is one of the most complex systems of the human body. It will take more than one generation to unravel all the mysteries of what's going on in our mind, in our nervous system, and so on and so on. So we made a start 8 years ago by developing assays for neurotransmitters, which are the chemical signals of the nervous system. And by doing so, we found a number of interesting things. But before I go too deep into it, let me tell you that the nervous system really, you know, is the crux and the center of the human body. This is where all the action occurs originally. This is where all the controls are. This is, the nervous system decides how we live, how we feel, whether we are happy, whether we are sad, and whether we are healthy or whether we are sick. So consequently, this deserves a lot of attention.
Why don't you tell us, before you get into everything, exactly briefly, because we've got so much to cover, what are neurotransmitters? And what do they have to do with behavior and emotions?
Okay. Neurotransmitters, as I said, are the chemical signals of the nervous system. The nervous system, different from an electrical system, are not just solid wires. The wires in case of the nervous system consist of millions and billions of neurons or nerve cells, which interconnect to each other via chemical parameters. So, in the simplest form, the neurons or the nerve cells talk to each other and connect to each other via chemicals. However, the signals by themselves are electrical. So, really, we have an interesting phenomenon here. when a message is sent, the original message is electrical. However, since the message has to be transferred from one neuron to the next neuron, this is done via a chemical, and those chemicals are called neurotransmitters.
Okay, I have a question here. Because I know you studied philosophy now, I want to ask this question. What is it that sends this, that makes things start happening? It's not brain, so what is it?
Huh. That is a good one. You mean what
consciousness?
What drives the whole system? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Originally, the autonomic nervous system obviously is unconscious. So it's an autopilot. You know, it's just there and it functions.
What runs it though?
Beg your pardon?
What runs it?
What runs
something's
it?
Something's got to run it. You know, something's got to run the computer.
Yes. What we do have in our nervous system, and particularly in the central nervous system, we have a so-called circuit board. You know, similar to a circuit board of a car, you know, which controls numerous functions of the engine and how the car is running, how it's idling, and all those things. Mm-hmm. We have similar things in our brain. And those neural circuits, as we call them, are very complex plans and designs which control certain specific actions. For instance, when and how we sleep, when it's time to go to bed, when we wake up in the morning, or, for instance, when we become excited, these are all driven by very complex circuitries, meaning there is a very thought-out a plan behind all those actions.
Right. Okay. Now, I want to talk about your service, what you do at your lab, I think is one of the most important things that's going on out there. And I believe that it's very indicative of behaviors and emotions now as well as those in the future. But I know that Western medicine is giving you a problem with that because it's not 100% accurate, and there's reasons for that. But I want the people to understand that, you know, there may be some problems, and I want you to tell us what those problems are and why the accuracy is not 100%. But 60 or 70% accurate is better than none at all, which is what Western medicine is using right now. Don't you think so?
Yes, I think so. Let's start out with the fact that the human body, in its first place, is an accumulation, a very sophisticated assembly of chemical entities, chemical molecules. And they really provide the basis for everything. And among them are the chemicals of the nervous system. And within the nervous system, the most important chemical reagents or chemical entities are neurotransmitters. We have roughly between 50 and 100 different so-called neurotransmitters, and they differ in their chemical activities, they differ in their structures. For the most part, these are all very tiny molecules. And just to name a few, some of you might have heard about serotonin, which seems to be involved in mood disorders, which also is involved in cognitive function. Another neurotransmitter, for instance, is dopamine. Dopamine, many of you have heard about the Parkinson's disease. And in this case of Parkinson's disease, we have a decrease of this very important neurotransmitter dopamine in the brain. Another neurotransmitter, for instance, is adrenaline. Adrenaline, you know, remember when we are in a fight and flight situation, then we get this so-called adrenaline rush. Another one very important neurotransmitter is noradrenaline or norepinephrine, which is very important for cognitive function It is also important for the sympathetic system, and so on and so on.
So what you're basically telling my audience is that by having these tests, you can determine if you have impending disease, if you have the underlying reasons for emotional instabilities, depressions. Is that right?
Yes, it is true. It is true. The nervous system, let me go back a little bit further. Those neurotransmitters can be divided in two different classes. One class consists of so-called inhibitory neurotransmitters, and the other class consists of so-called excitatory neurotransmitters, and both have to be in balance. For instance, serotonin belongs for the most part to the group of inhibitory neurotransmitters, and another one like adrenaline or norepinephrine or glutamic acid, for instance, belongs to the group of excitatory neurotransmitters. And when both the inhibitory and the excitatory neurotransmitters are in complete balance, then you feel well. Your body functions well. You pretty much, avoid disease occurrences. Mm-hmm. However, if the system, if an imbalance in the system occurs, then all of a sudden problems begin to occur.
Go ahead. I thought you were stopping. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah. So, of course, for instance, when we get in certain situations, the system reacts to it. When we get into a fight or flight situation, then all of a sudden, the excited neurotransmitters are called into action. But once the situation is over, then things revert back to normal. And this occurs through the action of the inhibitory neurotransmitters such as serotonin and GABA, which is another very important neurotransmitter.
What does GABA do?
Beg your pardon?
What does GABA do?
GABA is the number one inhibitory or calming neurotransmitter in the brain and also throughout the body. The counterpart of GABA is glutamic acid. Glutamic acid or glutamate, some of you are familiar with MSG or monosodium glutamate, is the counterpart to GABA. It's highly excitatory. And in the brain, it consists roughly 30% of all the neurotransmitters in the central nervous system. So both GABA and glutamic acid have to be in balance. Otherwise, problems do occur.
Now, one thing I'd like people to understand here is these, like serotonin, you have to use precursors. You can't
yes.
just go and take these things. So
yes.
Could you explain precursors and how the combinations are important?
Yes. So this is very important. Those neurotransmitters are made from the normal food items and from our diet. For instance, serotonin can only be made from tryptophan in our diet. And on the other hand, adrenaline or noradrenaline or dopamine can only be made from tyrosine or phenylalanine. Both are amino acids in our diet. So you can imagine when people live for the most part on a carbohydrate-rich diet, then over time the body will develop a deficiency of those important neurotransmitters because a carbohydrate-rich diet contains very little precursors such as tryptophan or tyrosine or phenylalanine to make those important neurotransmitters.
Interesting. Now, you did this test on me. Do you happen to have that in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Let's talk about that because I'd like people to understand what you've done here and what this means to me and how I can change my health.
So, of course, you know, we ran a test on Eva Herr, and I knew absolutely nothing about her. And on the other hand, when you see those numbers, I can pretty much say in what situation she is in or how she feels. This is very interesting. So without divulging any secrets, I can tell you the following. For instance, in her case, we tested for epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin, GABA, glutamic acid, and a few other neurotransmitters.
And it's also okay to talk about me.
Beg your pardon?
I'm kind of open on my radio show, and everybody kind of knows about me.
Okay.
It's okay to talk about me.
All right. So these neurotransmitters, they acid in a single urine sample, which was collected sometime in the morning. So what I saw in this test was the following. I saw a relatively normal adrenaline number, and I saw a highly abnormal noradrenaline or norepinephrine number. Dopamine was fairly normal, and the serotonin was on the low side. So what it tells me is here the system is clearly out of balance, because otherwise you would have a normal norepinephrine number. Her number was roughly three times the level where it should be. So what are the consequences of this imbalance? By the way, we also ran a cortisol on her sample and the DHEA. Both are adrenal parameters.
So what does that mean?
Yeah. So I told Eva that I suspected that she is pretty much a stressed out person, that she has some sort of anxiety, and she also doesn't sleep too well. And this kind of symptoms are a direct consequence of those abnormal or out of whack neurotransmitter levels.
You know, the interesting thing about that is, if I step back and look at my life, I will say, yes, I'm probably a stressed out person. But I don't really feel that way in mine, because I kind of live in the moment, so I don't really realize that it's different from other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The problem here is eventually, since you have no other choice, you get used to the situation. I always tell people, you do not know what you could feel if your neurotransmitters were normal. You know, those changes occur very slowly and gradually over time. So consequently, we are getting used to, or, you know, we begin to live with a situation where we become a little bit more anxious, slightly more irritated, we do not sleep as well as we should, we wake up more often. But, you know, eventually we begin to accept that.
Mm-hmm. You actually said something, you asked me if I jumped when somebody said something suddenly. You know, a lot of people do that, but we don't realize it's indicative of something wrong.
Yes. And, you know, when you live in this kind of chronic stress situation, slowly, certain clinical conditions begin to develop, because the body was not built and has not evolved to deal with a chronic stress situation. The nervous system really has evolved over millions and millions of years. By the way, those neurotransmitters which we're measuring in humans are very similar also in other animal species, such in primates or in dogs or in horses.
Interesting.
We have about a year or 2 years ago tested close to 60 or 70 dogs, and we found surprising similarities.
That means they have to feel the same way we do, doesn't it?
Yes.
Since emotions are chemical.
Yes. So the parameters of the nervous system are millions and millions of years old, and it is a very, very conservative system. And the reason why it is so similar throughout many species is because, you know, this is apparently a very optimal system to deal with a health situation.
Now let's go back to my sheep for a minute. Let's assume that some other people have the same problem. What would you tell me to do to fix it?
What I would do is when we have this kind of situations like we have with Eva, the first thing we have to do is we have to strengthen the inhibitory or the calming part of her neurotransmitters. So what I would do in her case, I would recommend that she takes some precursors to build more serotonin. Because, you know, serotonin has a calming influence on the human body.
And that would be what, 5-HTP?
This would be either you can take tryptophan or even better, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is the immediate precursor of serotonin. And by the way, for many of people in the audience who might not be familiar with it, the next step of serotonin is melatonin. Melatonin is an important sleep hormone. So if you do not have enough tryptophan in your diet, you will not only have low levels of serotonin, but in all likelihood, you will not make enough melatonin that allows you to have a good night's sleep.
Now, I lost my train of thought. Oh, where would they? What kind of food would they eat to have tryptophan in their diet?
Yeah, this is. Let me just say something here. If you have a significant neurotransmitter imbalances such as EVA, it is impossible to correct those imbalances through a normal diet or even through an optimal diet. Yes, it is important that you have a healthy diet, but at the same time, on top of it, in order to correct those abnormal neurotransmitter levels, you have to take some supplements.
Okay. And where can they find, they have to have this test ordered through their doctor, right?
Yeah, at the moment, we advise patients to go to the doctor and ask them to order this test.
And insurance doesn't cover it, but I think it's only normal anyway.
Yes.
It's only about $200 or so,
yeah,
isn't it?
The testing is covered by quite a few insurances, and we make a lot of effort to convince other providers to pay for this kind of test. An average test, you know, just a single neurotransmitter runs at around $18 or $20. So a profile such as Eva's profile would run at around $150.
I tell you what, it's really worth it.
Yeah,
it really,
I
really
think
is.
So too. I think so too.
What other diseases can you tell are coming by these tests? What about multiple sclerosis and cancers and diabetes and things like that?
Yeah. Here the nervous system has an indirect influence. Neurotransmitters per se do not really cause a disease. But what happens here is when you have abnormal neurotransmitter levels, then the signaling event does not occur properly. For instance, if the signal to a certain organ in your body is always faulty or gets corrupted, then eventually the organ doesn't function as well anymore as it should be.
Now, is that receptor issues or is that just the signaling itself?
Now, it is the origin of the problem is a faulty signaling. And in the second place, then, we have we begin to see a compromised organ function.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of supplements would they? What kind of neurotransmitter would they tend to be short on if they had, let's say, multiple sclerosis? Because I know that's a thing that's happening a lot today.
Yeah, multiple sclerosis is a very difficult one, and let's not forget that we are just at the beginning to where we understand certain clinical conditions and what's causing them. By the way, we still do not have a good idea what causes multiple sclerosis. However, it seems to be very much involved with the dysfunctioning of the parasympathetic system. Remember, the nervous system can be divided into a sympathetic, into a parasympathetic system. And again, here we have to balance between those two entities, and both have to be aligned in order to have a well-functioning body. So MS is, for the most part, a problem or a dysregulation of the parasympathetic system. And by providing support for the parasympathetic system, we have seen significant results and progress in patients with MS.
What chemical is it usually related to?
We do not have a test for acetylcholine, which is the most important neurotransmitter in the parasympathetic system, because of technical difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe down the road we will succeed in developing such a test.
What does acetylcholine do?
Acetylcholine is another neurotransmitter, very important, very important.
What does it do?
Oh, it is involved, you know, in the signaling of the parasympathetic system, particularly, you know, in areas where we have inflammation and other occurrences.
Would electrolyte imbalances and water balances in the body affect the neurotransmitters firing?
Yes, for sure. Minerals such as magnesium or potassium, and all those things affect neurotransmitters because you have to have healthy neurons, healthy nerve cells. And here is a situation where a healthy diet comes in. You have to have, you know, in your diet a healthy amount of lipids in order to make healthy membranes for the neurons.
What is the difference between neurotransmitter supplements, like the precursors and things, and pharmaceuticals? I mean, we don't have a shortage of Effexor. So
yeah.
Why do we take Effexor and not the precursors?
Yeah. So here is a problem. The pharmaceutical approaches really deal for the most part with fixing a specific problem. For instance, Effexor is a so-called selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, meaning it is given to people who have low levels of norepinephrine. And by doing so, we can increase at least temporarily the levels of norepinephrine. However, there is one disadvantage. When you do this over a prolonged period of time without giving the patient at the same time the precursor for making norepinephrine, such as tyrosine, then eventually the system becomes depleted. Remember, those neurotransmitters are contained in some small vesicles. Everybody has significant reservoirs for neurotransmitters, and they have to be replenished all the time.
Is that why people have withdrawal symptoms when they come off of them quickly?
That is a possibility. That is one possibility. So, and also when patients are for too long just on medications, eventually those medications become are not functioning anymore. And this is exactly the reason, and what's behind is a depletion of those respective neurotransmitters.
Now I have a question here. I just pulled Effexor out of my hat because that's what I personally have taken
before.
We know that I have 3 times the amount of norepinephrine that I need.
Yep.
But my doctor gave me Effexor, which you just told me was something that made norepinephrine.
Yep.
So why did I feel better when I would take that extra norepinephrine when I already have too much?
Yes. You do not really have too much. Really what's happening here and what we're measuring is the norepinephrine activity. We do not measure the amount of norepinephrine that's in your body, in your reservoir. So there is a distinction here. That's why it is so important to go to a doctor to help you with the interpretation of the results. So by you having such high norepinephrine levels for so long, you eventually depleted your system of norepinephrine. And just the addition and the use of Effexor helps to accumulate more norepinephrine so that you feel better. So a high activity provides a constant drain of this important neurotransmitter in your system.
Okay, so was that the right medicine or not?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. However, you also should take together with Effexor some low-dose tyrosine in order to make sure that you provide your body with the precursor for making norepinephrine.
Oh, because I would have thought if I had the levels like I did that I should not take Effexor.
No, no. What you see in the report represents neurotransmitter activity, so it does say nothing about your neurotransmitter reservoir.
Oh, I see. Okay. So what other, let's say somebody had a shortage on dopamine, how would they feel? I mean, what are the symptoms so they could recognize it?
Dopamine, like many other neurotransmitters, are involved in numerous functions. Remember, none of the neurotransmitter really is it's just, you know, working in a particular area or it's just particularly important for any specific function. They're all those neurotransmitters have multiple functions. Dopamine, of course, you know, is important for motor issues, you know, movements of the body. And so when you have, you know, the trembling in your patients, then there's a shortage of dopamine because of the degeneration of dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra. However, dopamine is also very important for learning processes. Dopamine is also very important for emotions and feelings. And dopamine in the peripheral system is very important for proper GI function.
Interesting. Which neurotransmitter has to do with addiction? Because I know a lot of people have that problem.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You asked me a difficult one. At the moment, I think we do not know enough about addiction to say for sure this or that neurotransmitter is involved in addiction. We know a few parameters. Dopamine definitely is involved, but there are also some other neurotransmitters involved in addiction. So at the moment, I have to say, unfortunately, we have not found a proper treatment to really, you know, help people with addiction. We found a number of supplements that help, but really the ultimate substance and medication or supplement we have not found yet.
Mm. So that's one that so many people need.
Yeah.
So if somebody has a tendency to be, let's say, depressed and in a dark night of the soul and miserable and have no hope, what would that be indicative of?
All right. When you have this kind of symptoms you described, it can mean many things. Remember, all those clinical conditions do not have a single origin. Most of them are really a combination of an interplay of several neurotransmitters. In case of low mood, you know, or having no hope and having low esteem and all that, it's really a combination of low serotonin levels in combination with low norepinephrine levels. So in this case, you need to support both neurotransmitters, serotonin and norepinephrine. However, I have seen, and it's well described in the literature, there are patients who are depressed, they get much better simply by supporting the serotonin system and using 5-hydroxytryptophan. On the other hand, there is again other patients who just by taking a norepinephrine support feel so much better. And again, there is a third group of patients who need both, who need a good serotonin support and a good norepinephrine support.
Mm-hmm. What about people who have a lot of anger problems?
Yeah.
And that, but they don't really have anything going on in their life. They're just angry.
Yeah.
Anger.
Angry. Yeah. Yeah. So anger issues are really, you know, a result of an imbalance between the inhibitory and the excitatory system. All those patients who have anger issues and have anxiety issues, they all have an abnormal excitatory system. All those neurotransmitters really that contribute to high anxiety, such as glutamic acid, such as epinephrine, or such as aspartic acid, all those neurotransmitters really, you know, are in high gear. So really, it's almost uncontrolled. And I have to say, overall, we should have a little bit more compassion with these kind of people, because very often they cannot help themselves. Remember, you know, behaviors are driven by chemicals in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have abnormal chemical levels, either for genetic reasons or through any other secondary reasons, then those patients are kind of helpless, because unless you correct those levels, they cannot feel better, or they can behave differently. So I always advise people, rather than preaching to those people they should behave or should control themselves, it is much more advised first to look at the chemical situation of their nervous system. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe there are abnormalities, or maybe there are imbalances. So coming back to those people who are aggressive or have high anxiety, in those cases, we need to take care of them by giving them a good support for the GABA system. Remember, GABA is the number one inhibitory neurotransmitter.
And how do you do that? What would you take for that?
GABA can be given directly in the form of some supplement which is called phenyl GABA. But the GABA support also comes indirectly from many other areas. For instance, when people take glutamine, that can have an effect on GABA. Or when people take theanine, you know, the active amino acid in green tea,
mm-hmm.
they feel better, and so on and so on. So it is a GABA is more an indirect marker, or it cannot be supported very well directly.
So does it take, when you take these supplements, do they also require certain vitamins to be, like some things require vitamin C when you take it? Do they require those kinds of things to make them work?
Could you repeat your question?
I don't know how to get it out of my mouth properly. Excuse me. Some supplements, like, take a certain vitamin to go along with it to make it work. I get kind of like a precursor. So, like, when you take, let's say if you take 5-HTP, do you need to take vitamin C or vitamin B or E or fish oil with it or something to make it work?
Yeah. So, yes. It depends on the preparation you're taking. There are certain commercial preparations available which have right away the cofactors which are required for making those neurotransmitters right away in a given cocktail. In other cases where commercial preparations just offer, for instance, in case of 5-hydroxytryptophan to make serotonin, only 5-hydroxytryptophan, then you want to make sure that people also get some healthy vitamins supplements.
Which ones?
Particularly in the case of serotonin, you need vitamin B6.
Okay.
Vitamin B6.
Because our doctors forget to tell us about this.
Yeah. But I would say that's why it's advised when people have abnormal neurotransmitter levels, at the same time, take a good vitamin preparation, which really provides most of the cofactors which are needed to make a healthy neurotransmitter.
Now, you sell some of these supplement combinations, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, we sell some of them, but, you know, I do not want to go too much into commercial aspects. Yes, for people who are interested in some of the supplements, they can go to our website and look what's available. Most of our supplement preparations contain all the cofactors, so just to avoid the people that run around and they're buying this and buying that and buying that, because it is very difficult for a layperson to know exactly how much of a particular substance they have to take.
What your site, just so people know, it's www.neurorelief.com.
Neurorelief.com.
So if somebody has a child with ADD or ADHD or perhaps, what's that one that so many children are having that slipped out of my mind?
Autism?
Autism.
Yeah.
What can you do to help those children?
Yeah. As you know, autism cannot be cured at the moment. And autism is caused by a number of different things. That's why we call autism these days a spectrum disorder, meaning in a given patient, autism is caused and by an aberration of a certain aspect in the nervous system. However, the second patient with autism has abnormalities, other abnormalities in a different area of the nervous system. So there is not a single cause, as we know of today, which is really responsible for autism. And then we have similar situations with people who have ADD or ADHD. Again, ADD and ADHD are spectrum disorders, and that's why it is almost impossible to come up with a single medication or a single supplement to treat those conditions. Remember, when it comes to the nervous system, everything is complex. Nothing is simple. So if you are in for a quick fix, it will not work for the nervous system. Now, let's briefly come back to the situation of ADD, attention deficit disorder, or what the same syndrome paired and paralleled with hyperactivity, which is then called ADHD. Here we have definitely a number of people who have too much, for instance, of norepinephrine in combination with high levels of serotonin and also high levels of epinephrine. So really, you know, they have too much of certain neurotransmitters. At the same time, they have too little of other neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the patients with ADD or ADHD are treated with Ritalin. However, Ritalin does not work in all patients. It works in a certain...
It has bad side effects, too.
Yeah, and it has side effects, too. So we have an ongoing project in coming up with good alternatives for this type of patients. So far, I think we're beginning to see some light here, and I think within a month or two, we are introducing... a product, an alternative product that really should help people with ADHD, which is not a pharmaceutical product, so it's a natural product.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen very good results in children with attention deficit disorders, but also in children who have behavioral issues. Remember, there's a lot of mothers and the dads who are complaining about the misbehavior of their children. And again, here I'm pleading for some compassion. It's not all, you know, faulty education and whatever people want to make out of it. Many of those children have true chemical imbalances of the nervous system, and I think those things can be treated. And however, in order to know how to treat and to do this in a very targeted fashion, it is very well advised to do some testing in order to find out where the abnormality in a certain patient lies.
Absolutely, and this is the only way to do it. Otherwise, they're just guessing.
Yeah, and that has been the drawback so far with most of the approaches. There was no testing available, and even today we have a hard time convincing doctors to do some testing because they have been taught in school you cannot test for the nervous system.
Right.
Many of them have never heard about neurotransmitters. So we see a lot of a push coming from the parent side who bring this information to their doctors and tell them, yes, indeed, we can measure neurotransmitters. Those measurements might not be perfect or 100%, but it is definitely much, much, much better than simple guesswork, which is used by many of these doctors today.
What do you think the accuracy rate is?
Could you repeat
what
that?
What do you think the accuracy rate is?
The accuracy, I think the accuracy is roughly 80 to 85%.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's much better than going through, 10 or 15 antidepressants trying to find the right one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have to say, this kind of situations where one tries out numerous medications on a patient to find out which one is going to help, those things really could be almost completely be avoided by doing some testing, to find out exactly, what causes a particular a clinical condition.
Absolutely. I just got an email from one of the listeners that said, wanted to ask you a question, and it says, do neurotransmitter levels test results vary according to a person's state of mind when tested?
All right. First, let me address some basic issues here. Neurotransmitter levels are the same in men and women, so there is no difference. And in that sense, men are not smarter than women. And you still see it on some websites which claim that women have lower serotonin levels than men, and so on and so on. This is really, I call this garbage. This is not really based on good, solid evidence. So far, we have tested over 200,000 patients, and we have not seen any evidence of different neurotransmitter levels in men and women. So coming back to your question, do we see differences in neurotransmitter levels as a result of clinical conditions? I have to say, absolutely, absolutely.
And what we mean, I'm assuming what you mean, clinical conditions, is people that can get in an altered state of consciousness, relax themselves, biofeedback and stuff, I would imagine that the firing would be different.
Yes. All those things are very helpful and very good because what it does, for instance, acupuncture or meditation or prayer or whatever you want to do, even sport and moderate exercise, all those things have a dramatic effect on neurotransmitters and on the nervous system. So I think even people who are very critical of all those so-called manipulations, I never would use this kind of word for, when somebody is meditating or praying or whatever. No, these are all very, very healthy things to do. So what those things do is they really calm down. They have a calming effect on the nervous system. They calm down the excitatory neurotransmitters, and as a result of that, people feel better, at least temporarily. But let me just caution here a little bit. If you have a patient who really, is chronically angry or upset or easily irritated, yes, you can calm this person down by going through some of those manipulations. However, you cannot correct this kind of a situation by meditation if you have a true chemical deficiency. Remember, meditation or acupuncture and all those alternative treatments cannot truly make up for a chemical deficiency, here the only thing that helps is providing the body with the respective chemical precursor.
Right, okay. I'm going to... Sorry, I've got the flu this week. I'm so sorry. Now, I've got like 10 minutes left, well, 8 minutes left. And now that I know you studied philosophy, I've been asking a lot of the world's leading thinkers in medicine and physics some certain questions, and I wouldn't mind asking you a couple of those questions if you don't mind.
Okay, go ahead. I will try to answer them. But, you know, remember, this is my personal opinion.
That's okay. Are you familiar with quantum mechanics at all?
One more time.
Quantum mechanics. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah.
Okay. The field of consciousness, you know, all the source of intention or whatever that is.
Yes.
What is that to you? Is that the consciousness of all there is? Is that the underlying thing that fires, causes the neurotransmitters, the brain to start thinking, the body to start feeling, the signaling to go on?
I have thought about those things quite often. And I have to say here, in the first place, you know, we have a body. And, you know, the body consists of hundreds and hundreds of various chemicals. And they all have to be in proper order. They all have to function well. And through some arrangement of chemicals in the nervous system, we have evolved as human beings who have the ability to have consciousness, who have the ability to reason, who have the ability to think about other things, who have the ability to think beyond life, or whether there's an afterlife, or something like that. Yes, I have to say, animals, and some people say even plants, have feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That is so. Yes, all animals have feelings. But very often, and here is the difference, they cannot reason about it. They have feelings, and they deal with those feelings, but they cannot talk about it.
Right. They just feel it.
They just feel. And this is the difference between animals and humans. So, however, what that quantum leap is from an animal to a human, so far, we cannot say, we do not have the slightest inkling how this occurs.
Do you believe in a higher power or a source of all there is?
Yes, I do.
God?
Yes, I do.
I don't like to step on anybody's toes, so I try to use all those words.
Yeah. No.
Since we know that chemicals are what makes us have feelings, we know that they combine and they make us feel different ways.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be logical to think that God has no emotion, that he simply judges everything as being perfect? Because serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine aren't floating around in, you know, the stratosphere.
No.
How would God have emotion?
I think so.
How would he have
but
it?
Yeah.
Since he doesn't have
the only way
he could have it would be to come into a body, it seems to me. I don't know. Just picking your brain.
Yeah. You know, I always say, God has to be everything what we are and much, much more. So consequently, there is a superior intelligence, the superior emotions. And I have to say, these have to be positive emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But how this is done, you know, I think this will ever be impossible for us to comprehend and to understand. Otherwise, we would be God too, if we really would understand God. So we are always on the short end of the stick.
Do you think that information from God, that's a higher power, whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
is conducted to us through signaling?
That is very difficult. I mean, what you call here, you know, what is spirit, you know? What,
yeah. I mean, how else would we get that information?
How do we get it? Yeah. We have not the slightest inkling how this could occur.
Interesting. So, do you think, and I'm just picking your brain through questions that I ask other people, okay, some of the scientists. Do you think that there is, I believe that there's no separation between us and anything else.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I think so too.
Do you think we live in a holographic environment?
I think we are part of everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are not a separate entity somewhere on an island. No, I don't
right.
think so.
Right.
Also the question, what comes after death, you know, is it all over, or do we go on in one form or the other? I totally believe that.
Do you think it's all happening at one time, or is there a past, do you think there's a past or a future?
No, I think it is just a different state.
Right, right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because time doesn't exist anymore.
Right, right, right. Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of work. Do you keep up with the work on this?
Beg your pardon?
Do you keep up with the work that's going on in human consciousness?
Yes, I always read about it because I'm interested in. You know, I try to do both. You know, at the same time, I try to be a good biochemist. At the same time, I know chemistry is just the foundation for all those other things.
Do you think that magnetic monopoles would have anything to do with the firing of the neurotransmitters being at optimal levels or off levels?
Yes, it's imaginable. I think when it comes to those issues, there is much, much more going on than what we currently can measure. I think it's just a lack of a technology or implementation to get a better feeling or to get a better knowledge about those parameters. You know, in that sense, what we're doing here is still very, very crude, you know. I think there is so much more going on, and I believe it is just we should have an open mind here.
Yeah, it seems like your work would have run very closely parallel to consciousness.
Yes,
to human consciousness.
I think so. Because, you know, it is kind of strange when you have, you know, a faulty chemical arrangement, all of a sudden, you know, you're a nasty human being.
Uh-huh.
And if the chemicals are in the right position, all of a sudden you're a wonderful human being. You know, this has puzzled me for quite some time. And I've become, as a result of that, very, very careful to judge people. And tell people, you know, this is a good person and this is a bad person.
Right.
Really, you know, what do you call good and what do you call bad in light of, you know, the chemical arrangements we have in our nervous system?
It's truly an amazing field of study.
Absolutely.
It really
absolutely.
Is.
And I think the more I begin to learn about the nervous system, the more careful I become in my judgment of other people,
uh-huh.
the more compassionate I have become. Because, you know, a lot of people go through some, a lot of suffering, not because it's their own fault, but, you know,
they can't help
the circumstances and genetics they have and all those things.
Well, we're out of time now, but I would like for you to tell people one more time how to call your company.
Yes.
And where to find you.
Okay, so the website is www.neurorelief, one word, neurorelief.
And that's R-E-L-I-E-F, not relief.
Relief, R-E-L-I-E-F.
.com.
And the company is in Osceola, Wisconsin, which is outside of Minneapolis. And the telephone number there is 715-294-2144, and you can call people to find out, you know, to tell you whether there is a doctor in your neighborhood that is familiar with what we're doing, or to get some advice. We have quite a good customer service group and a good technical group that can answer some of your questions.
Thank you so much for being with me, Dr. Kellerman. I wish you would come back sometime.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
And good night.
Good night.